This idea of chanting and dancing and ecstasy was a theme that Prabhupada talked about a lot. And sometimes devotees would question, well, what is this ecstasy Prabhupada's talking about? Because ecstasy is known as bhava, and bhava is a stage before love of Krishna fully manifests, and we all know we're not so close to that stage yet, or very far from it. So how could Prabhupada talk about chanting and dancing in ecstasy, even sometimes referring to people who are just coming to Krishna consciousness or just coming off the street? So it's important to understand that, because kirtan allows people, even new people, to experience spiritual bliss coming from the spiritual platform before actually, you could say, in a sense, they're qualified to experience it, or qualified in the sense that they've achieved the state by which one would then experience ecstasy. So it's something that the holy name gives, especially in kirtan. It's like a gift that you get some taste of the love of Godhead very immediately, very soon, very quickly, without being on that stage. Because normally, you would say, you have to be on the stage of bhava to experience ecstasy, just like this. Different ecstatic symptoms. You can read about a nectar of devotion, which are achieved by those on the stage of bhava. But how could you achieve those if you're not on the stage of bhava? It's kind of like saying, you're healthy when you're sick. It's a contradiction. How can you be healthy if you're not recovered, or you're not a healthy person? But it's kind of like you're not feeling well and you take some superfood and all of a sudden you feel all kinds of energy, which does not equate with your normal state of health. It's like, you know, you're feeling full of energy like a young man, but you're not a young man and you're not healthy. Something like that. It's like you haven't achieved that state of health through your work, but now this medicine, you take it and then you feel healthy, at least for the time being. So it's something like that. So that's why Prabhupada said that we can experience ecstasy even though we're not on the level of ecstasy, because that's what the holy name delivers. And that's why it's so special. Because you're getting something which you really don't have and you're really not qualified for. And ecstasy in Krishna consciousness is very important. It pushes us closer to Krishna. It energizes us spiritually. And it's not only important, but we could say, in a sense, it's essential as a nutrient for our spiritual life to have that experience. Asovarjam, Asopiasya, to have a tangible experience of ecstasy in spiritual life is very important. Otherwise, you're experiencing spiritual life kind of mentally or ritualistically, but not in reality. It's because Krishna is the embodiment of bliss, right? And ecstasy. Yes? So if you're experiencing him, then you must be experiencing ecstasy. It's not like you experience God and you fall asleep or you come away unchanged or not moved. Obviously, if you saw Krishna, then you'd be moved. Right? So, if you study nectar devotion, you've read that there are different stages of devotional service leading up to prema. And bhava is the stage before. And bhava is the stage where one is almost completely pure. Not completely, but almost. And it comes after the stage of attraction and taste. So it's a very high stage. It's said to be like the seed of love of God. And on that stage, one begins to experience ecstasy in connection with Krishna, different ecstatic emotions. So you're pretty much finished with the material world. Otherwise, you can't experience emotion in Krishna consciousness if you're too connected with the material world, because your emotions will be more connected with material things. Right? Like, if you're with someone and you don't really like them, you won't experience much emotion because you don't have any feeling for them. So if you're in Krishna consciousness, but you're in a neophyte, most of your emotional experiences, or much of it, will be for material things. Well, wasn't that a beautiful this, or didn't that taste good, or didn't that sound good? So you're free from those attractions and attachments in the stage of bhava, and then therefore all your emotion for Krishna comes out, because the attraction is so strong there. So that's why one develops ecstatic symptoms. It's just, ecstatic symptoms are just heightened emotions. Like, you know, generally, you don't have experiences in the material world where your hair stands on end. But it could be. Like, perhaps a doctor does a surgery on a loved one, and he says it failed and they died. And somehow or other they came back to life. Maybe your hairs would stand on end then. Some like very rare, intense emotion, right? That would be not ordinary. Or something very, very, you know, you were separated, you know, in some terrorist event, you were separated from your loved ones for 10 years and you finally meet. And the emotion would be so strong. You would cry, you'd shiver, the same symptoms would develop. So that's what's happening, because love of Krishna is so powerful, the emotion is just overtaking. So bhava is a stage where love is almost perfect, and therefore all the emotions are coming out. There's maybe a few little traces of anartha or past offenses that need to be purified. So sometimes what Prabhupada would say, we're dancing in ecstasy, which by that definition doesn't make sense. Because we know we're not experiencing ecstatic symptoms, we're not crying, rolling on the floor, hair standing on end, and other things. It's called Ashta Sattvika Bhava. There are eight, Ashta means eight. And there are eight transformations that take place internally, then manifest externally in the body. So, once the devotees were chanting in India in a very, very pious town. This was in the early days of India, and it was the first time they had come there. And the people had never seen the white sadhus, so seeing the white sadhus was such a phenomena that Americans had become devotees. It was like the whole city came out. And devotees were being honored, people were bowing down, they were being garlanded, and people were basically going crazy. And as you could imagine, the devotees were overwhelmed by this response. They'd never seen it in America. America's response was pretty much the opposite. You know, it's either neutral, sometimes a little positive, but mostly neutral, sometimes negative, but you know, not like people coming out by the thousands and thanking you for coming out. That would never happen. To be lucky if anyone said that, that's rare. So they weren't used to that. So it was overwhelming, so the kirtan just came more and more ecstatic as the people were more ecstatic. You know, like in India, people, when they become ecstatic, they'll start dancing and cheering you on. So they had a very amazing kirtan, just overwhelmingly ecstatic. And then the next day there was an article about them in the paper, and it said that they were chanting and dancing in ecstasy. And in this town, there was apparently a Gaudiya Math institution, or a member of the Gaudiya Math had read the article. He was a disciple of one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, so he was like a, kind of, you could call him a god cousin to us. Like, you know, that same, he's this disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta, one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, he was his disciple. So he wrote a reply, and he said, he explained the principles described in Nectar Devotion, that first to begin with faith, then faith leads to association, association leads to the practice. I want to be like these people. What do I do? So you start doing what they're doing. It leads to the desire to take initiation, bhajana kriya. And by that steady practice, it leads to anartha nirvritti, which is the gradual reduction of anarthas, unwanted material desires, which leads to nistha. When substantial number of anarthas are removed, then you become steady. Nishtha means steady, so you're not one day happy, one day sad, one day attached, one day detached, confused, up and down. And then comes ruchi, that after most of these anarthas are gone and you're steady, you begin to get a taste for Krishna consciousness, which is stronger than your taste for material life. And then your spiritual life is basically downhill from there, because your spiritual taste is stronger than your material taste. So you're not struggling anymore. And then asakti, which is attraction, so your attraction to Krishna starts to become very strong at this point. And then you have bhava, which is where the ecstasy begins to manifest, because love of Godhead is beginning to sprout. So he explained that, and he said that these people had just adopted Krishna consciousness, so to say they were chanting and dancing in ecstasy is not philosophically correct, because they couldn't be on the stage of ecstasy, because they're just young devotees. They're stage of bhajana kriya, maybe. If you're generous, you can say anartha niruti. Because sometimes Prabhupada said that if you take initiation, is anartha niruti, because you're following the four rules and regulations. So that's in a broad sense, anartha niruti. You could say bhajana kriya. So they read the article of the Prabhupada, and after he heard this explanation, they were not in ecstasy, they're not chanting and dancing in ecstasy, Prabhupada just smiled and said, no, we were chanting and dancing in ecstasy. So what was he saying by that? He was saying, I mean, in a sense, he wasn't disagreeing, because he wasn't saying we're on the stage of bhava, but at the same time he's saying we're chanting and dancing in ecstasy, which means that ecstasy of bhava was coming down to whatever level we were on through the mercy of kirtan and the holy name. So I'm down here and I join in the kirtan and I go up here, not because of qualification, but because of the power of the holy name. So the holy name, that's what got us into Krishna consciousness. It's like, okay, you're down on the ground and now we're going to take you to the penthouse. Not that you're qualified for it, but you're going to go to the penthouse for a few hours, and then you can live like a rich man, and then you leave and go back on the street. So we can live richly in kirtan and then go back to our normal life, and hopefully that kirtan has purified and uplifted us a little bit closer to that stage where someday the ecstasy will be constant, and the attraction for chanting will be constant and very deep. So that's the power of kirtan, that you immediately get Krishna consciousness very intensely. The thing that also empowers kirtan is that it's social. Japa is more personal and private, and kirtan is more social. So although when you're chanting japa, you may get what we call in the hippie days contact high. If somebody was high, sometimes you would experience what they were experiencing by association. So it's like secondhand smoke, contact high, something like that. So although you may get a little bit of that during japa, still japa is very private. It's very personal. It's more of a one-on-one relationship with Krishna. But in kirtan, you're getting the energy of the entire congregation. So your energy may be low, or you may be distracted, or you may be not feeling very Krishna conscious, but you will get from others their focus, their devotion, their concentration, even if you don't have it. And the more devotees there are, the more you'll get it. And if you go to a kirtan mela, you'll get it very intensely, because there are thousands of people there. So you can come in any state of lacking Krishna consciousness, and just in that environment you'll get picked up. Whereas that may happen somewhat in japa, but you could chant japa with 1,000 people and still chant bad rounds. It's possible. Or maybe sometimes even more likely, because you'll talk to a few of them. So, not that we're advising you go dig a hole and, or a cave and chant there, but still, it's something you really have to work on. The energy really has to come more from your effort. And that's why many devotees say they have an easier time chanting japa, because doing kirtan, because they're getting the support of other people. So, therefore, kirtan is very important as a way to very quickly and deeply and easily get Krishna consciousness. And therefore, it's Lord Chaitanya's gift. Now, in kirtan is very joyful. We just have to understand that kirtan is for Krishna's pleasure, and kirtan is still a prayer, as is japa, praying for service. So, because there's singing and dancing is fun, and singing and dancing represents partying in the Western sense, so we have to be careful we're doing Sankirtan party and not just ordinary party. Sankirtan party means, party in this sense means a group. But party for us means, you know what it means. So sometimes we have to be a little careful that it doesn't borderline on that, that it's celebration and glorification of Krishna. It's not just having a good time. Because dancing is a good time. Right? So Prabhupada was a little conscious that the dancing should be graceful and it should represent a form of honoring Krishna. Not, it shouldn't represent our ego, who's the best dancer. But at the same time, it should also manifest our devotion, our ecstasy, our feelings of happiness and Krishna consciousness. But it should be done graceful. And everything about the kirtan, Prabhupada at least instructed us that it should be graceful. He used the word melodious. He sometimes would say sweet and melodious, not clang, clang, bang, bang. So Prabhupada used those words, clang, clang, bang, bang. There's one story, there was one of those clang, clang, bang, bang kirtans. So he asked another devotee after the kirtan, what did you think of the kirtan? The devotee said it was okay. And Prabhupada said it was horrible. Clang, clang, bang, bang. So at different times Prabhupada had spoken about kirtan being sweet and melodious. And sometimes devotees would chant very loudly, almost screaming. This is actually for a harmonium, not for a speaker. Unless we stick this under here. Oh, it can't go under. Anyway. If I speak louder, I have to turn this down. So you talked about kirtan being sweet and melodious, which is, you know, you have to consider kirtan as an offering to Krishna. So Krishna is sweet, and his name is sweet, and everything about him is sweet. So Prabhupada was a little concerned about kirtans where people are screaming and banging too much. So both in dancing and in singing. So it's sweet and melodious, nice, sweet. And as I said, always aware that kirtan is for Krishna's pleasure. It's not like we're just having a party, you know, who can dance and who's the best dancer. So there's a story, I think it was in Chicago. And devotees were dancing, and as is often the case, we'll tend to dance according to the style of our country. Like sometimes in India, you'll see devotees dancing like this. You know. And Americans, like this, but you know, like what you see in a movie. But you don't see that in American movies, so Americans don't dance that way. They'll dance some other way, twisting or something, doing the boogie or whatever. So there was that tendency, and Prabhupada had taught us to dance in a specific way. So in Chicago, devotees were getting into the whatever they were doing. I wasn't there, but I heard about it. But they're getting into more of the kind of dancing they would do when they were younger, and Prabhupada stopped the kirtan. He just stopped it. Stop. He said, not like that. Like this. And he had his arms up, and he showed. Graceful. So both in dancing and in style of kirtan, graceful, sweet, nice. That's what Prabhupada recommended. So then we have our own nature, which may not be graceful, which may not be sweet, which may be passionate or ignorant or whatever. So sometimes Prabhupada would stop kirtan and correct the devotees. I heard two other stories. I heard one time there was a melody which was very... Prabhupada didn't like it. It was very Americanish. I'm not sure what it was. I don't want to say what it was because I may have been told, but it's so long ago, I don't want to say. But anyway, he stopped the kirtan and he said, take your, it was in India, and he said, take your melody back to America. Somehow he didn't feel it fit in the Indian environment. So there were times when Prabhupada would correct things which were, he felt were improper. Sometimes devotees would say, Bolo Hare Krishna, and Prabhupada would send someone and say, tell him to stop saying Bolo, or Jaya Hare Krishna, or anything, because Prabhupada said that's not the Hare Krishna mantra, so don't say it. So he did make corrections like that. And it was not common, but it did happen occasionally. If it was just something that Prabhupada saw was inappropriate. It was too passionate or not Gaudiya Vaishnav mood. Now, there were other things. He didn't like kirtans being complicated, because kirtan was meant for everyone to sing. So as you may know, Prabhupada's kirtans were quite sing-alongable. They weren't complicated. People could easily get the melody and sing along. And so that was kind of a signature, the kind of kirtans that Prabhupada did, because obviously you're trying to get people engaged. So if it's too complicated, it's too hard, then they can't engage. Now for us, especially if you're a musician, it may not be complicated for you, and it may be entertaining for you, where the simple ones may be boring. But the idea was that Prabhupada didn't want us to be focused on music. He wanted us to be focused on the holy name and the devotion. He didn't want mridangas louder than the voice. He wanted mridangas, kartals to follow the leader. And he wanted it to be simple. It's interesting. He really wanted kirtans to be simple. Even if you hear any recordings of Prabhupada playing mridanga, he's like been playing since he was a kid, so he's expert, but it wasn't complicated. And he actually sometimes said, don't play complicated beats. And the reason being is because it would distract from the chanting, that you'd be more focused on the rhythm than the holy name. At the same time, he said the mridanga should inspire us to dance. So it's an instrument which will energize us to get us to dance. And then Prabhupada said the dancing will bring on ecstasy. So then it brings us back to that point where Prabhupada was talking about ecstasy. Ecstasy is important. It's like something we want to get in our kirtan. We don't want to get a kirtan that sounds like we're going to a funeral. You've probably been to some kirtans like that, right? Is this a funeral? You know, it's very, very low energy. No, sometimes, you know, sobriety is there, gambhira, very sober. But generally, kirtan is, is joyful. Yes? Meant to be joyful. So Prabhupada said, the mridanga means he should be so expert that he'll get everyone dancing. I was in a kirtan with Prabhupada, someone was playing mridanga, and Prabhupada asked that he give the mridanga to another devotee. Apparently, he was not expert, or Prabhupada didn't like the way he was playing. So, Prabhupada would say, we're not musicians, at the same time, we should be expert. At the same time, not complicated. So, not because we're not musicians, we're chanters of the holy name, doesn't mean we shouldn't be expert. It just means it shouldn't be the main focus. Right? You understand this? It's a balance. Spotlight is on Mahatma. You don't have a webcam here, huh? You should have one. I'm looking up there and seeing what do you have. My natural effulgence wasn't sufficient. It must be a bad day for me. So, we should play expertly. Prabhupada, stop somebody. Don't play mridanga. But it's not a musical performance per se. It's a performance of devotion, which has music. It should be done expertly. So you want to do everything expertly for Krishna, of course. But you don't want the music to dominate, because then the chanting becomes secondary. So that's what Prabhupada didn't want. He didn't want the chanting to become secondary to the instrumentation. One devotee told me that they asked Prabhupada about harmonium, and he said, if someone is expert, they can play. But if they're not expert, then it'll distract because they're not playing well. And if they're really if they're really going fancy, then that will also distract, because people will listen to the harmonium more than the holy name. So again, expert but not, you know, complex. Prabhupada likes simple. Kirtan says, we're saying, and one devotee said, there's a certain style of chanting in India where they'll accentuate the end of a word, the syllable, like that. Krishna. And he said that Prabhupada didn't like that. I don't know if Prabhupada told him directly, but he said Prabhupada didn't like that. My understanding is there's a style of kirtan done by the Sahajiya class, and the Sahajiyas are those who are devotees, but not strictly following principles. They don't feel the need for it. They tend to be loose, and they can become very loose. And they'll chant like, Krishna. So then it starts to become a little too much. So Prabhupada didn't like that, because it's more simple. And there's a story about that. One devotee was leading Guru Puja in Prabhupada's presence, and he began to chant a mantra that was often chanted in Gaudiya Math. So he's chanting this mantra as an introduction to the kirtan before singing Sri Guru Charana Padma, and he was a really good musician. And, you know, it was very expertly done. And he had all his musicians around, and they were ready, you know, to do this musical performance. And Prabhupada actually stopped him. He said, get someone else to lead. Because it was too staged. And Prabhupada felt it and he didn't like it and he stopped it. Interesting, isn't it? So it just makes the point, it's not a musical performance. At the same time, if musicians aren't expert, everything's offbeat, off key. Who's going to be able to get in the kirtan unless you're on a very high level of Krishna consciousness and you're just relishing kirtan, you know, someone can sing off key and you're fine. But generally, in ISKCON, you won't find many people like that. You'll find people will say, that was a wonderful kirtan because someone was expert and he could engage people and get people to dance and like that. So that's an example of Prabhupada stopping someone when he felt this is going to be a musical performance rather than a kirtan. It's going to be more about the kirtanier than Krishna. So we want to avoid that style of kirtan. And I think when the music gets elaborate, it tends to draw attention to the singer. Wow, you sing so well. Krishna! You know, it's just going on, and then it becomes like a concert or performance, which draws attention to the singer and away from Krishna. Isn't it? Tends to. So Prabhupada wanted us to avoid drawing attention to ourselves, because that would be like a pujari doing arti in like a super fancy way. You know, I can't really imitate how he would do it, but you could imagine a flamboyant pujari, you know. Big, you know, maybe has big diamond earrings, big sika, big tilak, and a dhoti with beautiful tricolor borders, and you know, big tulsi necklaces. And the way he's doing arti is like, you know, he's in a Las Vegas Brahmin or something. You know, just obviously it would draw. You know, if he. To an extent, it would add, but after a certain point, it would draw attention to him. Right? You know, say, well, he's doing beautiful art, and he's very artistic and graceful. That adds to the beauty, but if it becomes like a performance, then he's getting in the way. And then that would distract us, right? Yeah. So kirtan is, you have to see kirtan as an offering, like you'd be offering bhoga to Krishna, or anything you'd be offering to Krishna. Krishna is for your pleasure. Just like you're cooking, and hopefully when you're cooking, you're not thinking, after I cook, the devotees will taste this, and they'll think, I'm such a good cook, and I'll get brownie points, and everyone will say, you are a great cook, and I'll go home feeling really good. No, if you think that way, then it's not being offered to Krishna, it's being offered to your own false ego. So we train our cooks not to think that way. So it's the same with kirtan, because kirtan is an offering for the pleasure of Krishna. So it's no different than offering anything else. So that's why Prabhupada stopped it. Because he felt it was more about that person. So he stopped it when he saw it was too much music, or maybe he saw it as too much ego, or he didn't like the melody, didn't like the mridanga player. And then Prabhupada was not into professional kirtan, even though professional kirtan may be more beautiful than some devotees' kirtan, but he wasn't into professional kirtan. Because he always said, we're not professionals, but our strength is in the purity. And there's a purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Prabhupada said that when we do dramas of Krishna's pastimes, all the actors should be pure devotees, because that will communicate. He said, we don't want professional actors, because professional actors can communicate professional performance, but they can't communicate the bhakti. So the same thing about art. All the art we were doing was not, in the beginning, done by artists who were very accomplished, but he appreciated the bhakti. And when they became more accomplished, and he didn't see the bhakti in it, he appreciated the simpler paintings in the beginning. He said, here's devotion. Because they wanted to put in newer paintings, and he said, I like the older paintings better. Because he saw there was more purity in the older paintings. So even technically, the newer paintings were better, he rejected them. Interesting, right? So the purity of the chanter, I think this was mentioned when Shuru was here, Shuru Prabhu was here, the devotee who takes out the Harinam party, she was mentioning that. The real thing is purity. We want to chant nicely to attract people. We want to cook nicely to attract people. We want to decorate the temple nicely to attract people. But the main attraction is the devotee themselves and the purity with which they chant. That's the real attraction, right? So, you can manifest your purity and your devotion through performing nicely. But the performance is an offering, and the performance is an offering of devotion. That's the idea. It's never just music. On various occasions, Prabhupada said, we are not musicians. You know, they wanted to shoot a picture of him on an album with a mridanga, and he said, we're not musicians. No, he's the spiritual master of the Hare Krishna movement. He's not. You know, a picture of your guru on your altar with a guitar or something. He may play the guitar. He may have an album where he's playing guitar and singing, but it's not really. You don't want to portray that image either from his perspective or from your perspective. Right? Although he may be a great musician, a great singer, and so on. But what is communicated is the purity. And so, performance, music and performance, always tends to excite the false ego, because that's just the nature of conditioned life. So you have to be careful when we think kirtan, because it's a platform in which the false ego can be easily boosted, because some feeling that you're creating something which is being enjoyed by others, and you're creating something good, and people are reciprocating, and then your ego gets boosted 10 points, and you think you're the best thing in the universe next to Krishna, a close second. Krishna's name is nice, but when I chant it, it's really nice. Yeah. And then that ruins the kirtan, and that consciousness is transmitted. So if you're chanting purely, then you're transmitting pure consciousness. Right? So here's the central point, and we're gonna discuss this in the japa workshop. But I think I told the story perhaps in a class. When professional kirtaneers were doing kirtan, and Prabhupada heard them, he said, they're not chanting Hare Krishna, but they're chanting money. So of course what Prabhupada meant is they're doing this as a profession. So they'll chant Hare Krishna, they'll chant whatever you pay them to chant. So although you're hearing the Hare Krishna mantra, they're just chanting, they're basically saying, I'll chant whatever you want me to if you pay me. So they're not really chanting Hare Krishna, they're chanting money. The consciousness is money. It's a very significant point, because Prabhupada's making the point that even though you can be doing something for Krishna as direct as chanting his name, even though you're chanting it, you're not chanting it. You're actually in a different world. You're with the holy name, but you're not with it, because your consciousness is somewhere else. So you can be offering to Krishna, but wanting to get something from it, and so you're not offering what it seems you're offering, but you're offering your consciousness. So you're offering your desire, Hare Krishna, I want money. So you're not really chanting Hare Krishna, but you could be as easily chanting as, give me money, yeah, we're talking, give me money, it's what I want. Right? So, that's very important. So it's not just that you have the mantra and everything's good, but you have to have the consciousness. Otherwise, you have the mantra and the wrong consciousness, you really aren't chanting Hare Krishna. You're chanting money or whatever it is you're chanting. And it comes out as the sound Hare Krishna, but it doesn't affect anybody as Hare Krishna. There's no spiritual exchange. So that's why Prabhupada said the purity of the chanter is very important. So, now, why don't we open it up now for discussion, questions, comments, clarification. additions, or you could suggest another area that you want me to pursue, want me to talk about. I'll let you think about that for a minute.
Well, there's one other. Okay, there's one other point I was going to bring up, but I didn't. I'll bring it up now.
If you give a talk or a workshop on kirtan, and you talk about certain standards that Prabhupada set, and you talk about standards that were practiced during Prabhupada's time, there may be some confusion, because you might be thinking, well, what you just said, I see sometimes different. Sometimes kirtans are loud and fast. Sometimes there's the, you know, the long endings. Sometimes there's the intricate mridangas. And you might say, I love those mridanga players, or I love that melody with them. And the purpose of me giving this talk is not to make a judgment on anything. It's just general instructions. General instructions that Prabhupada has given. And something for us, at least, to understand and practice. And of course, you can't control anybody else. But there are many things in an organization that change over time. I think in Prabhupada's time, we only had like 5 melodies that we chanted, basically, 5 or 10. Then we went to India, we got some more Bengali melodies. But for the first few years, sometimes 2 melodies, sometimes one melody all day. Okay, you lead kirtan, same melody, you lead, same melody, you lead, same melody. And you ask the question is, well, is that the way Prabhupada wanted it, or is that just the way it was? Yeah, probably a little of both. And then you have the social phenomena that things just change over time, because culture changes, people change. Different people are chanting. In those days, most of the chanting was done by brahmacharis in temples and brahmacharinis. Now it's done by all kinds of people in all kinds of situations. So, it does have the tendency to form itself into its own genre, as does any kind of music, and that's what's happening, and I don't think anyone can stop it. And I don't want to make a judgment whether it's good or not, but the thing we can say is a lot of people are chanting now. And if you can get people to chant, Prabhupada's happy. One devotee told me a story that he was playing guitar in the kirtan, and somehow was in a country where people related to guitar, and it really got them into it. And normally you would think that Prabhupada would want to keep kirtan just kartals and mridanga, because he said that many times, kartals and mridanga. But the devotee told me in this incident, some devotees were suggesting he stop, and Prabhupada said no, continue. Somehow Prabhupada liked it, or he saw it was working in that situation. So, you know, although Prabhupada may have made very specific instructions, and sometimes there were exceptions. And we had a discussion once where there's a mantra. Different mantras come up, and you wonder, and some devotees wonder, are they bona fide? Because you have to wonder, because Prabhupada didn't chant them. So you may have heard them in Gaudiya Math, but still, even though they're coming from the Gaudiya Math, maybe you may question, is it real? Is it bona fide? One such mantra that must have come from Gaudiya Math was Gaur Nityananda Bo Hari Bo Hari Bo Gaur Sri Advaita Bo Hari Bo Hari Bo. So one devotee tells that he was with Prabhupada when another devotee was chanting that, and Prabhupada didn't say anything. So my conclusion is that if Prabhupada didn't say anything, it means he didn't stop it, it's okay.
But the other side of it is, he never told anybody to chant it. So there's a balance there. So this came up in a conversation. And someone asked the question about all these other mantras, you know, Radhe and Kaur Nityananda. I don't know specifically, I can't remember specifically what they were telling Prabhupada, you know, people were chanting other names of Krishna, Radhe, this. And Prabhupada said, there's no harm, but basically, basic chanting should be kirtan. Now, there may be harm with certain mantras. We used to chant a mantra, Gopala, Gopala, Jasodanandana Gopala. Gopala, Gopala, Shishodanandana Gopala, Shishyada Madan Mahan Makija. So, Prabhupada said, don't chant it. I can't tell you why. Sometimes he tells not to chant something because the names were Rasa Bas, they were names of different relationships the names reflected didn't work together. Or sometimes the mantra was chanted by a sahaji group or something. So sometimes you don't know. You know, you pick up a mantra at a yoga studio and this and that, and then, you know, a year later you find out, Prabhupada forbid us to chant that because that's what the sahajis chant. Or it means this, it's, you know, it's mixing Lakshmi and Narayan with Radha and Krishna and Balaram, and it's not proper. So, you know, Jai Sachi Nandana, not like that. It's names of Krishna. They chant and we chant often. So Prabhupada said, as a general statement, no harm. But if you are not careful, the whole kirtan will get chanted by a whole medley of other things other than the holy name. So we don't want that either. So the basic idea is to stick to kirtan. Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And then I just heard recently that Prabhupada said, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Panchatattva Mantra, chant it 3 times. That's sufficient. Not like, you know, 10 times. Not go on for 5 or 10 minutes, but just chant it 3 times. Main thing, the Hare Krishna Mantra. That's what will save us. It's the most powerful. So as far as the danger, I don't want to call it danger, but I will, for the sake of the point I want to make. The danger of learning all these standards is that you see many people don't follow them. They don't know them, or they know them and they don't want to follow them, or they don't believe in them, or their kirtan mentors and the people they respect as kirtan leaders don't follow them. So it's something very difficult to control. So having said that, at least we want to understand the principles. It's not just about music, it's about the holy name. It's about keeping your ego at bay. It's not about showing off that you're a great musician. It's about getting everybody into the kirtan and honoring the Lord through His holy name. And at least the one suggestion I would try to enforce as far as if I have any power to enforce personally was keep it sweet, and that the people who play instruments should know how to play, because we have examples from Prabhupada of stopping people from karchols, from mridanga, and stopping these very loud, clangy, screamy, wild kirtans. So at least I think we're safe if we set a speed limit on the kirtans and a decibel level and a sweetness standard. I think that would be nice. And try to avoid allowing people to play who are not expert. A lot of times I go to temples and people think they know how to play, and they're actually just disturbing the kirtan. They don't know how to play. They know 1 or 2 beats. And they know the beats really well. And basically, those beats are used for, they're supposed to be used for 3 minutes of a kirtan and they use it for the whole thing. And it just ruins it. And they don't know it. So we want to invoke ecstasy and camaraderie during kirtan. And the instruments are meant to support that. That's the idea. Is that okay? So, anyone have any questions, comments, arguments? Ideas. I mean, all we're really doing here is just explaining what Prabhupada had said. Now, there may be other people who are kirtaneers, experts in ISKCON, outside of ISKCON, who will say other things. So I'm not so much aware of what they say. I'm more aware of what Prabhupada says. But I think everyone agrees, keep your ego out of it. And, you know, don't. One thing that I personally, this is just me, I don't think it's right. And take it as me, as a personal opinion, rather than Shastric statement. But I think it's just an observation that it's nice to help people get absorbed in the kirtan, and if you change, if you have a kirtan with like 5 melodies and you go 3 mantras, 1 melody, and 3 mantras the next, and 3 mantras the next, and 3 mantras, then changing the speeds, changing the beats all the time. It's very good and ecstatic for the people who are practiced and know how to do it, but for everybody else, it kind of, you're just getting the melody and then it changes. And all of a sudden, the rhythm changes and you can't even figure out how to clap your hands to it. So it has its own ecstasy for those people who do it, but not necessarily for everyone else. Everyone else all of a sudden becomes a spectator rather than a participant. And I'm a musician, so I appreciate what they're doing. Because for me as a musician, it's like, it's really nice and sweet. But also, knowing how Prabhupada led kirtan and seeing other people kind of left out of it, the other side of me doesn't feel good. So you're just lost. You guys went up, and everyone's blissful that you went up, but now we can't chant because we can't figure out. You know, you're making all these changes. We can't keep up with it. We're getting lost. So Prabhupada kept it very simple. Long kirtan. Start slow, build up. You know, maybe a high part and a low part. That was about it. So that's his example. I don't want to rain on anyone's parade. I know a lot of devotees are very good at very complex kirtans and they can be amazingly absorbing and sweet, but we want to keep the people on the ship. We don't want to throw them off the ship. And you know, you're getting into it, you want to get more absorbed in it. So it, you know, you have a melody that goes for a long time, it's easier to get absorbed. Musicians like complexity. That's just their nature. For people in general, complexity could lose them. So the musicians, they get into it. It's more stimulating for them. And the melodies create certain moods, which create certain ecstasies, so it works. But it may not work for everybody. So at least we have to be conscious. You want to get everybody on board with your kirtan. That's the idea. Everyone engaged. So, any questions? Yes. Well, there may be more than two, but you know, the standard melody, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. That was basically what we all chanted every day. There's another derivative of that similar. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. There may be a CD out, well, I don't know now, download, something you could download, but just Prabhupada chanting Hare Krishna melodies. So there are more than two. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare. Prabhupada chanted that one. He chanted Govinda Jai Jai Gopala Jai Jai Radha Ramana Hari Go. I think he chanted that. Of course, Prabhupada chanted lots of bhajans. He chanted another one. He chanted this one.
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
He chanted that. Well, generally, we didn't use that for kirtan. That was like a refrain in the bhajan. So there were only a few melodies that Prabhupada had introduced that he was chanting. And then we came up with, I don't know where the other melodies came up. I think we came up with our own. And then when the devotees went to India, then they got melodies, the Bengali melodies. They started recording the kirtaniers in Mayapur and bringing back those melodies, which had more. Some of them had more ancient roots, but we found out later that a lot of those were rooted in melodies that were found in classical Indian movies. With many, many, many of those kirtans, you know, I think this is an amazing melody, sounds very devotional. And then you find out later that was a famous movie. And they were all rags. And they, you know, the music was beautiful and it worked for kirtan, so they just used it. Interesting, isn't it? So a lot of these melodies we're chanting were actually songs and movies that probably in movies that the Bengalis saw. And they liked it and they used it for kirtan. I was on a train once years ago in India, and then when the train stopped, they were playing music. And I think the music was Hare Krishna, you know, it was just music. Na, 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 na. It was a kirtan that we chant, and it was like a, so it means it was a well-known song. And I thought, that's funny, they're playing our kirtan, but there's no chanting. So it means it was a popular song, and somebody decided to put it to kirtan because it worked. But who knows what the words were before it had words. Or maybe it was just instrumental music that used in a movie. So, you know, obviously there's certain melodies that work better than others, and some melodies may evoke the wrong mood that may be more reminiscent of, you know, sexual songs. But if it's reminiscent of a love song, then that would be nice. What's happening? We're going to have prasadam now? We'll have in the temple? Oh, okay. Okay. So kirtan is a touchy subject because it's kind of like we have so many individuals, but kirtan in the earlier days was less individualistic. Well, everybody had their own style, but it was, I don't know. How many melodies do you remember? Two? One? One melody. Do a kirtan, stop, talk to the public, and then do it again, same melody. One melody all day. We didn't really know there was supposed to be more than one. I guess at that point we didn't know there was more than one. Yes? Question?
Yes, a melody.
Yeah.
More energetic melody. Well, any melody that inspires devotees and encourages them to dance will be good for outside Harinam, because your ecstasy is attractive to everyone else's ecstasy. I mean, not attractive to their ecstasy, it will inspire them, at least attract them in some way. But if it's at a festival where you want to get people to sing along, then you want to be conscious that if it's too complicated and it's always switching, these people have never chanted before, you want to do something that's quite simple. And I've seen myself in public forums, it's not that kirtan, which is complicated, gets people more ecstatic or more involved. Often it's the most ecstatic or the most simple. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. It's very easy and people get into it. Yes, sir.
Yes,
of course. Yes, I'm starving.
Different melodies according to the different times of the day.
Yeah. Okay, well, the melody in the morning, there's a story that someone was chanting the wrong melody and Prabhupada stopped them and told them the right melody. This is a melody that is meant for that morning arti, mangala arti. It's called the morning melody, which obviously means the chant in the morning. And so the whole kirtan is in that one melody. The Guru Vashtika is chanted in that melody, and anything else you chant, Prabhupada's pranams, the Panchatattva mantra, Maha mantra, it's all chanted in that melody. Samsara dava nali dhaloka tranaya karana gana gunatam Pratasya kalyana gunana vasya vande guru si charana ravinda mahaprabho kirtana nritya gita baditramajan manushar sena romancha kampashu taranga bajo Bande Guru Sri Charanaravindam. That's the morning melody. Then you have the evening melody for the Sandhya Arti. Iva Jaya Jaya Gora Jande Aro Tiko Shobha. The Prabhupada had a different melody. Kiva Jaya Jaya Gora Jande Aruti Kashoba. So either the first melody is generally what you'll find in Gaudiya Math. Prabhupada had this other melody. We also used to chant. So, and then, you know, for certain songs there are standard melodies. Shomati Nandana Braja Bharana Bhara Kukula Janaka. No, that's one melody. And the other one, Jasamati Nandana Vajavarana Kukula Ranjana Kana Amala Harina Amiya Vilasha. Generally, those are standard melodies. Certain, you know, Jairada Madhava, Prabhupada gave us that melody. Jairada Madhava. No. Jairada Vihari Kupi Jana Ballaba Girivardhari. So yeah, we know the melody. Well, Prabhupada chanted it slightly different than we chant. Anyway, if you get that CD or go online somehow, there, I believe there's somebody compiled only Prabhupada kirtan. All the melodies Prabhupada chanted. But some of them may just have been Prabhupada just sitting in his room chanting, so it's kind of more like a bhajan than a kirtan. Yes. It's time for prasadam. You can serve while we're talking. I mean, until the questions are in, over. So does anyone else have any comments, questions, arguments, doubts, challenges? This is it's a sensitive topic, and I'm a little cautious about speaking about it because I don't want to offend anyone. At the same time, I want to tell you how it was, at least when Prabhupada was with us, and the things I know that he said. And I don't want to pose myself as some kind of expert, because there may be those who would have other views of it or who could disagree with something I said, but I try to present it in a balanced way so that any side of the coin would be okay with it. Is another thing that Prabhupada said. He didn't like the chanting of Jai Gurudev because Gurudev is generic, whereas Prabhupada was specific. That was the title that he had. Gurudev is generic. So sometimes they were chanting Jai Gurudev I guess they picked that up from other temples, and he said, don't chant Jai Gurudev. He stopped it. He said it's impersonal, because it's just like everybody's Gurudev, but you're chanting to your guru.
So these metals come from disciplined obsession?
You would like to think they come from Mahaprabhu or Narottam Das Thakur or some tradition. But the thing is that when you investigate any tradition, you find a lot of it just comes from the local culture and gets adapted by it. But the local culture may be reflecting its ancient roots, so therefore it's like, where are you from? Mexico? You're from Mexico?
El
Salvador. So it's Catholic country, right? So, the way the Catholics dress, Jesus didn't tell them to dress that way. That was picked up within the culture they were in. The music, how they do things.
I mean that Srila Prabhupada, he taught different tunes of
he taught a few tunes and certain, melodies for certain times of the day. It's hard to say because sometimes someone may have done something that all the temples adapted, and you don't know where it came, and you don't even know if it's right. Yeah, that's good. What's in there? Chutney? No. Okay. I think I'm going to end here, and officially, so that.